Okay, I'm going to start by apologizing to Reb George, because Reb George asked me earlier today what we're going to talk about. And I said, well, either Avram Avinu or Eliezer. And in the end, it's not about Avram or Eliezer, it's about Sarah. So you can go back home if you would feel duped. So we're on a different track. But that's acceptable too?
It's fine.
Oh, okay, good. We don't want to kid anybody. The truth is, it's quite appropriate. This week is really the parsha of the Hesped of Sarah Imenu. So if we're going to focus on someone in the parsha, let's follow Avraham Avinu's lead. He gave Hespedim about Sarah. We would have... Ephraim, that's also relevant. But he gave a hesped about Sarah. Would have been very, Torah says, a spoidless of course, the Sarah is spoidless. Certainly would have been very worthwhile to know what he said. But we're not going to know that. So let's try on our own to just get what we can get had we been at the time. So the truth is, we have to appreciate what the significance of Sarah Imenu's passing was. Thus, it seems technical. It seems technical. She was old. A 127-year-old woman is entitled to die, right? But we have to realize that in the historic sense, in the sense of the bigger picture of Bria Sa'ilam, Sarah Imenu's death marked the end of a very, very glorious period. And that is as follows. Avraham Avinu, we know of course, came and took the crown of the greatest man who ever lived at the time. Debatable how we'll deal with other Marishim, but whatever it is, in a general way we can make that statement. And more than that, we're kind of building off what we discussed last week. It's not just that, you know, the world was running and here's the greatest, you know, then someone came and broke the world record. No, the world in the first place was created in waiting. The world was created in waiting. Waiting for someone to come and fill a certain void. And that was Avraham Avinu. Or, if we'll put it a little differently. If we'll put it a little differently. The world, really, what is Olam Hazeh? What is this world? This world is a void. That's what this world is. It's a world in which Hashem concealed himself. Which is, we were born into it, so we're not shocked by the concept. But when a person really understands who Hashem is, the concept is astounding. Nefesh HaChaim says that that's one of the most astounding phenomena. And everything Hashem did is the fact that Hashem could kiviyachol be concealed. He said, it's so astounding that it doesn't even make sense. It can't be. Okay? Like he's coming from the other perspective. Understanding Hashem, he's having a hard time believing that there really is an Olam Hazeh. Right? How could there be? I mean, we're here. But yes, Hashem did this in order to grant us the greatest function that could possibly be, and that is for us, as we discussed last week, I'm summing up because I want to build off that, for us to be the ones through whom the Shekhinah shines. The Shekhinah will not have physical existence in this world, and this world is a physical world, but we can be the ones through whom the glory of the Shekhinah shines. And the truth is, this is already alluded to right all the way back at the beginning. The first, second pasuk of Bereishis, after you got the basic information, heaven and the earth were created, it says, the land was waste and emptiness, the choshech al tenei tahon, there was darkness over the depths, the ruach elokim merachefes al tenei hamayim. This is actually presenting what the whole story of this world is about. The Spirit of Hashem was hovering over the waters. All of earth was water at that time. That there was no dry land exposed yet. Earth was water. The Spirit of Hashem was hovering. What does that mean? Why couldn't it land? Because it was water? It's okay. The Shekhinah can land on water just like on dry land. What was hovering about it? The truth is that no, even when the dry land was exposed, the Spirit of Hashem remained hovering. The Spirit of Hashem continued to hover for centuries. It was waiting for that person to come who can serve as what we call Merkava LaShechina, the carrier of the Shechina in this world, the one who expresses the Shechina, and then the Shechina indeed comes down and connects to him, and then the Shechina has its place in this world. As long as the world, there is no such person, or as long as that person is not doing his function properly, that is, if we go back to last week, what we call a situation of Chilul Hashem. There's just a void. There's just a void. You don't see Hashem's presence. He was waiting for the person who can come and achieve the eligibility to be the one upon whom the Shechina, that the Shechina chooses to rest upon. This was who Avraham Avinu was. But now we have to understand that it was more than just that. Avraham Avinu was a person. Avraham Avinu was a person. But the way it works is that there's also a concept called makom, place. Beis HaMikdash is one of the most fundamental concepts in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism. Why? What is the Beis HaMikdash? What is the essence of the Beis HaMikdash? The essence of the Beis HaMikdash is that there are upper worlds and there are lower worlds, and the Beis HaMikdash is the opening between the two. It's what connects the two. When everything is done right in the Beis HaMikdash, as we just learned in Kuzari this week, it channels, it attracts, it brings in that influx, it brings the Shechina into this world. And from there, every individual has an opportunity to connect with the Shechina. The Shechina can, so to speak, spill over into all of Eretz Yisrael to different levels. Everyone has his chance to connect. But it all begins with that place, the Beis HaMikdash, where the Shechina rests itself, and then everybody can connect. Each individual can connect. As Shlomo HaMelech said, all tefillos are directed there. You connect to Hashem. That's the source of it all. Avraham Avinu's home was the Beis HaMikdash. Avraham Avinu's home served the purpose of what the Beis HaMikdash served. And when Avraham Avinu's home was Sarah, like the Gemara says, "Me'elam le'karisi le'ishti ishti, elo le'ishti beisi." One of the Amirayim said, Rabbi Yossi said, "I referred to my wife as my home." What does this mean? And the truth is, right? There's a famous magnet, you know, that there's that a house is made of bricks. A home is made of love. You have a brand new building that was built, nobody lives in it. It's not a home. A home is made of love, right? Everybody can appreciate the point that a home is more than just a building. A home is a nesting place for the family. It's where all the different people in the family are nurtured. It's an environment, right? It's and that is created, well, on the material sense also it's created by the mother, but the truth is that when we're talking Yiddishkeit, that statement has a much deeper significance. The home is not just created by love, but the home is actually the base of Kedusha from which the members of the home draw their Kedusha. The Jewish home is, that's what we know, Achasana is compared to Yerushalayim, Binyan Yerushalayim. Because yes, the Jewish home becomes the realm of the Shechina. The Jewish home becomes the realm of the Shechina. This was the first Jewish home in history, and this was Sarah. Why was it Sarah? Why wasn't it Avram? So we have to understand, the truth is that this also is reflected in the material level. Although it's not popular to think this way nowadays, man and woman have two different functions. Right? It's certainly not a politically correct statement. Men and women have different functions. In fact, there was once a famous lecturer named Rabbi Usher Wade. You heard of him? He's a German priest in the past. A German Catholic priest. Yeah, in the past. He has a whole very interesting story about how he came to discover that Yiddishkeit is the Emes, and when he began on his path approaching Gerus, exploring the different strains of Judaism, if we'll call it that, he was certainly something of a novelty, and different, you know, kehilas would like to have him associate himself with them, and among them were the Reform. I don't know if it was a Reform or the Conservative, but whatever it is, they were approached by representatives of some big Reform or Conservative kehila, and somehow one of them got into a discussion with his wife, Mrs. Wade, Rebbetzin Wade, and they were, you know, trying to sell their goods, and she said, "I could never join your community. You disparage women. I'm going to go Orthodox." So that was certainly a shocker for them. They said, exactly on the contrary, right? Everybody knows that it's the Orthodox who disparage women. By us, women can do anything a man can do, right? A woman can get an aliyah. By today, I don't know how great that is. Dogs can get aliyahs too. Dogs get bar mitzvahs, you know. So a dog can wear a talis. So maybe that takes back down the status of a woman. But I don't know, or either that, or it shows the elevated nature of a dog. Either one could be. But it's on the contrary. We're the big pushers of, you know, women's equality. So she said, that's exactly my point. I don't want to feel that in order to be worth something, I have to be able to do everything a man can do. There are the areas that a woman excels in. And I have to feel that I have to go against my nature, and I have to do everything that my husband does. Do you also allow women to grow beards in your community? I don't know if she said that, I added that, but that's the same idea. Maybe a woman is not worth anything unless she can grow a beard. So yes, men and women inherently have different functions. And if we'll put it in a very basic way, man is the foreign minister, woman is the minister of the interior. In other words, what was going on with Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu was out there. He was out there, right? He was out there giving public lectures to the masses, spreading his influence. Sarah was at home. Sarah was at home. Now what was she doing? It wasn't the technical thing that he had where to come home for supper. Sarah was creating his base. She was creating the base that was built according to his ideals. This was the headquarters of the Shekhinah that Avraham Avinu was bringing down into this world. And it was from there that the Shekhinah was able to spread. This was Mamish HaBeis HaMikdash. In fact, in certain ways, the Beis HaMikdash was modeled after what their home was. And when Sarah Imenu passed away, natural, not natural, makes sense, doesn't make sense, at the end of the day, something that had been achieved in this world now came to an end. To be returned, never to be returned? Oh, okay. We'll get there. But we see in the, right, we see Chazal tell us that there was a Hashvas HaShchinah, much like in the Beis HaMikdash, that rested upon their home that was no longer there once Sarah Imenu left. Avraham Avinu lived at home, but he was not the one who created it. That was Sarah Imenu. Sarah Imenu was the one who made their home into the place of Ashra, into the realm of the Shekhinah that it was. And therefore, for example, it says, right, much like the Beis HaMikdash, if there was a cloud hovering over their home, the presence of the Shekhinah was manifest, and that the candles would light, burn from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, candles that she lit, burnt all week around, and that there was special blessing in the dough that she made. These were manifestations of the Shekhinah, just like it manifested in the Beis HaMikdash. All this stopped when she died, even though Avraham Avinu certainly had servants who were lighting his candles and baking his bread. All this stopped. Because the essence of the home was no longer there. The Sarah Imenu was no longer there. Just illustrate this in a modern day way. This famous little anecdote said about Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and his students noticed that before he stepped into his home, he would neaten himself, make himself look presentable, tuck himself in or whatever it is. I don't know exactly what he did. I don't know if he pulled out a comb out of his pocket, I doubt it. I actually read somewhere that he straightened his tie. I'm sure Zalman didn't wear a tie. Whatever it is, the point is that he made himself look presentable before he entered his zone. He made a point of doing that. And one of the Talmidim once asked him, what the idea is. So he gave the classic famous response. He said, it says in Chazal that if there's Shalom ben Ish le Ish, the Shechina Shvuya ben Eyam, the Shechina there, since there is Shalom between me and my wife, our home is Makam HaShechina, it's the realm of the Shechina. When a person steps into the realm of the Shechina, shouldn't he step back for a minute and make sure that he's presenting himself right, stepping into the realm of the Shechina? So the story is often taken as a cute point that, yeah, before you go home, you're about to see a wife, make yourself look good. Well, it's true. Make yourself look good before you're about to see a wife. But let's understand that what Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is saying should be taken quite literally. He's saying that, yes, their home was a situation where it was a makam hashchina. You walked into Rabbi Shlomo Zalman's home. It didn't have to be Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. When you walked into a proper Jewish home that was built right again, not in the sense of bricks, but it was built right, you were stepping into the realm of the Shechina. You were encountering the Shechina. The Arizal says that the halacha is that before you step into a shul, says a person should stand outside the shul and contemplate for a moment that he's about to encounter the Shechina, he's about to engage the Shechina. It says v'yizdazeh ma'at, the person should tremble for a moment, meaning really bring it home. I'm about to step into a completely elevated place, a place where which is full of the Shechina. This is how Shlomo Zalman felt before he stepped into his home. I have to appreciate this. To appreciate that the proper Jewish home, the true Jewish home, is a place of great opportunity. Right? People go to the Kaisel to daven, because the Kaisel is the Makam HaShechina today. You're told that the proper Jewish home, the true Jewish home, is a place of Ashras HaShechina. You have to realize that, yes, it's also a place that's Mesugal to davening. Step into the home of such people, offer up your tefillah. You're stepping into your own home. You make your own home into such a place. It was a special place. It's one of the Mekomos HaKadoshim. Don't advertise it. You want people flocking to your home and sticking notes into all the cracks in your wall. But realize that this is the reality of your home. It's a Makam HaShechina. This is what Sara Yimeinu was. Sara Yimeinu was the home. And the home has a whole different level of significance. There's the individual with his achievements. And yes, Ram Avinu was achieving an awful lot. But he was drawing off the base that Sara Yimeinu provided him with, the Beis HaMikdash that she built. We have to appreciate this, because the truth is that, as we said before, really, I'll just add a little more to that. Therefore, it's very much a mother or wife's job to realize that she is the one who's largely responsible for creating the ideals in the home, for creating what the children are really going to grow up with. And the pasuk says, "Shema b'ni musar avicha, v'al titosh teiras imecha." Listen to the musar of your father and do not forsake the Torah of your mother. Very interesting wording. Your father, you have to hear his Musar in order to be influenced by it. But the mother, it's not like that. You grow up in the reality of who she is. All you're told is don't forsake it. The default is that you have it. You have what your mother put into you. Don't drop it. The pasuk doesn't say come and absorb what your mother has to teach. No, that's automatic. Just don't get rid of it. That's what we're telling you. Father, you have to make a point of learning what he has to say. Now, we have to realize, though, that all of this is symbiotic. Back in last week's parasha, we see how did the ideals in Avraham Avinu's home work. Back when he was serving the guests, it says that the guests spoke to Avraham Avinu, they told him what they told him. Sarah was listening from the entrance to the tent behind which this fellow, the guest Malach, was sitting. Why was she listening? She was so interested in the small talk that these Arabs were talking about. Why was she listening?
Didn't she want to give away Torah?
Ah, And Avigdor Miller says that it says more than that. It doesn't just say Sarah Shama, Sarah heard what he said. Sarah Shema'as, it says Sarah was hearing, she was listening, which implies that this was a regular practice of hers. When Avraham Avinu was outside conversing with his guests, he didn't bring them in. When Avraham Avinu was outside conversing with his guests, she was standing at the doorway and listening. She knew his Torah as well. She had given an awful lot of self-sacrifice for his philosophies. But yet she was listening. She didn't want to miss out on an opportunity to hear him say his piece again. And then she manifested it in the home. I'll give one example. Avraham Avinu introduced a policy of aloofness. Avraham Avinu made a, on the one hand, he was out there teaching the masses, but on the other hand, he very much kept to himself. You see that he settled in desert areas, wildernesses. Didn't even want to live in the populated area of Yerushalayim where there was Shem Ve'Eva. He wanted to be on his own because he wanted his home to be a completely sterile area. Didn't want any influence from the outside at all. He wanted to be the sole influence on any of the members of his household. They should be absorbing only what he has to teach. Nothing at all from the outside that could influence in any way. Okay? Now, Sarah absorbed this shita. She absorbed this hashkafa. And then what happened? To put it into coarse terms, she made Avraham Avinu eat his words. What happened? It was another family growing up in the house. Right? It was Hagar and her son Yishmael. Our beloved uncle Yishmael. Right? So, they were growing up in the house, and all of a sudden, Sarah started detecting problematic influences. She came like a lion, right? No rachmanis of a Jewish mother. The rachmanis of a Jewish mother was in protecting her son's spiritual welfare. That's what the rachmanis of a Jewish mother was. She came like a lion and demanded, kick them out. Avraham Avinu had a hard time with it, right? Hashem said, Shema b'koilo. What's going on here? Where'd she get this hashkafa from? She got it from Avraham Avinu. She implemented it in the house and turned that into the reality of their life. If I'll get a little personal here, I've sometimes had the annoying experience of speaking at the table or something like that in a fiery way about some ideal, and then all of a sudden, the next thing I know, my wife has implemented it in a very rigid way at home, and I say, one minute, not so fast. That's my hashkafa, that's not your hashkafa. No, that's the way it works. The truth is, this is also a fundamental element of the way the dynamics work. Look, in a very, very physical sense. In a very physical sense. On a few different levels you see this. The man contributes raw materials, woman takes it, processes it, and turns it into something concrete and operational. It's like that with children. The children come from the man. He gives his input, and she takes it and implements it, turns it into a reality. Parnassa is the same idea. He brings in money. You can't eat money. Right? Was it one of the Rothschilds, I think? One of the Rothschilds was once locked in his safe. Nobody knew about it. He died of hunger. With all of his millions. So he wrote something to that effect before he died. He left a note saying that you can't eat the gold. Right? So, yeah, man brings home money. The woman takes it. Man might bring home wheat. Woman takes it, turns it into food and clothing, turns it into sustenance from the home. And this is how it is with the ideals also. Yes, man is full of ideals, and he's busy teaching his ideals, and he's busy practicing his ideals. It's the woman who turns it into the reality of the home. It's the one who creates the ideals of the home. This was who Sarah Imenu was. This was the prototype, right? This was the first of this concept. That's why Taka, like we said before, when Sarah Imenu died, an era was finished, an era was done. But was it never to be returned? No, it was to be returned. As soon as Yitzchak Avinu bought in his Sarah, as soon as he bought in his Rivka, the end of this week's parasha, it all came back. It all came back. Because on the contrary, once we're plugged into Hashem, once we're plugged into the concept, we can all develop it. On the contrary, we're meant to turn our homes into this realm of Shechina, into this realm of Kedusha, into this pocket of Ashras HaShechina in the void of this world. So here I just want to focus a little more on understanding this. Again, a home is not a technical place where you go home to sleep or a convenient place to eat. The home has a value in and of itself. It has an essential value, the Jewish home. The Jewish home. And therefore, we have to realize that we have to have the seichel, we have to have the wisdom and the siyata d'shemaya to turn our home into the elevated realm it's supposed to be. We're talking about Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh is, especially if we're talking in today's terms, it's a dirty place. It's so full of garbage, and the garbage is so all-permeating, and it gets everywhere. Like, in earlier times you had to go look for it, today it filters into, it doesn't filter, you use a filter to try to stop it, but it spills into every last nook and cranny of the home. And that's just one example, but all of the superficiality, all of the shtusim, all of the things that are contrary to true growth, to Shechina in this world, which is really what this world is. The world is oilam. Oilam is from the word helem, concealment. We are meant to create within this reality a pocket of existence that's above it all. Yes, this world, the Shechina is concealed, but in my home can be a pocket of existence that's simply above all that. It's a pocket of existence where the Shechina shines. The more Jewish homes we have like this, the stronger of a presence of the Shechina in Klal Yisrael we'll have like this. It's like this on the individual level too. But we're focused on the home right now. And therefore, we have to realize, we say this often, we have to realize, make your home a pure place. Raise your home above the levels of the dirt of the world around you. Don't just let your home be sunk in the mud. Be very conscious of the ideals that are generating in your home. Be very conscious of the talk, of the ambitions that are going around in your home. The Shabbos table. Shabbos table is a great medium. Hanecho kishtile veisim saviv l'shulchanecho, Rav Shimshon Rufal Hirsch says. Pasuk in Tehillim says, your children are like olive shoots, of young saplings of olive trees that are planted around your table. In other words, your children are the young trees that you're growing. Because they're planted around your table. Why around your table? They're planted in the home. Rav Hirsch says, you have to realize that the table is a very, very, very great forum for growing these trees. They grow very much from around the table. The question is, what are you schmoozing about at the table? Are you just schmoozing about the latest, this week's events? Or do you have a planned agenda of what you're trying to imbue, what you're trying to instill at the table? It's a place for nurturing ideals and values. To make it very clear in your home, what do you admire? Right? Who are you talking about? Who are the people you revere? Is your home a place where the subject of reverence are the Gedolei Yisrael? That's why it's a good idea to hang up a picture or two of some of our great leaders on the wall. Or Sfarim, also an important presence in the home, even if you can't learn from them. I think I told this story, right? I don't know if I've told it here. That there was once, I forgot who it was, one of the rabbanim was collecting money in Chutz La'aretz. He came to the home of a person who was known as a very great lover of Torah, big supporter of Torah, and not just that, but even though he himself was not a very learned person, his children were very successful learners. This one was a Rebbe, that one was a Rav. He came into the home, and while he was waiting to meet the person who was sitting in his living room, there was a big shas on the shelf. So he wanted to pull out a Gemara while he's sitting and waiting in order to learn a little bit. So he took hold of one of the Gemaras, gave a pull, and the whole thing came out. It was a big cardboard box. It wasn't the shas. It was a big cardboard box that looked like a shas. It looked like a whole set of shas. There was nothing there. So when the fellow came out of his room, he saw that the guy was onto his trick. And his big cardboard box had been pulled out of the wall. I don't know if it was a refrigerator carton or what it was. But So he laughed sheepishly and he said, I'm not a Gemara person. But I want my children to see that Gemara is an intrinsic ingredient to the Jewish home. I don't know why he didn't go the extra mile and just buy a real shas. I don't know. Whatever it is, that's how the story goes. Certainly, if you can do it with a real shas, it's even better. And if your shas can actually look used, it's even better. It's okay if you learn it too. So, yes, children should grow up conscious of where the father puts his main aspirations, of what the father considers important. Is it all just about the business? Is it all just about news? Or are you discussing Torah ideals? Are you discussing... You have to realize, first of all, certainly don't rely on the schools. Don't rely on them at all. Don't rely on the schools. Don't rely on them at all. If anything, you have to be on top of the situation to realize where you have to be countering the school's effects. Schools in many situations are very effective babysitting services, but you have to wonder about what they're doing for your child's chinuch. Excuse me, don't quote me on that.
Is that in Israel or everywhere?
I'm certainly not making kolim here. Chas v'shalom. I'm not making kolim here. I'm saying it's something you have to be aware of. It's a phenomenon that exists everywhere, although plenty of places are certainly exemplary chinuch institutions. But you certainly have to be with a finger on the pulse. Is your child happy? Is your child enjoying the learning? Is your child coming across with a love for Yiddishkeit? Or is he starting to see it as just cumbersome? Anything fun is usser. You have to keep on top of that. You have to make sure that you're the one at the end of the day who's responsible to make sure that your child's ideals are going in the direction you want them to be going. I put it in a sharp way, but you can take it in perspective. A grain of salt. So realize that the ideals that you might consider basic and obvious are not going to be obvious to the kid unless they are hammered into him. You have to talk about things like Hashem. Yes, one person can go for weeks without thinking about Hashem. He's busy doing mitzvahs, he's busy learning. There's something very basic in Judaism, and that's Hashem, awareness of Hashem. I think Hashem is a real part of our lifetime. Olam Haba. Talk about that at home. Make your children aware. Try to have a regular part of their consciousness. Try to go back to the very basics. See, are my children really growing with this or not? It's your job to make sure that it's properly instilled. And also, leave the garbage of this world out of your home. You can take that pocket of existence and just schlep it down into the mud. This is something individual, right, subjective to each person's situation, but this is really what the struggle about internet and about media and all these other things is. Right? Don't let that fill your home. Don't just, you know, if your home is... Don't make holes in the bottom that just let all the water come up from the bottom, come up and into the home. Or whatever other influences there might be. Let the garbage stay outside. The world is a low... The street, the public situation, the world outside is a pretty low place. Don't drag your home into that. Keep it elevated above it. Keep it a purer, more refined place. These are all... some of the elements, of course. Think about this on your own. It goes much further, but these are some of the elements of developing the true Yiddish home. And of course, the main point is consciousness. Sometimes if a person feels, are you making an active practice out of this? Person comes home at the end of a hard day, is just ready to collapse, is just ready to drop in bed, right? No, you have to keep on top of whether you are actively investing these koichos in your home. Like we said before, the home is not just the home base where you come home and drop. No. Enter your home, beginning a job, you're on duty. What are you conveying? Are you conveying enough? Keep conscious of this. This is some of what we might have heard had we been present at Sar Yimeinu's Hespin. It's enough to take for us to take home and Bezes Hashem implement it in our own homes, because we have to remember that everything we saw by Avraham Avinu are paradigms for us to emulate. Will we do it to the same extent that they did? Highly questionable. But we have to realize that we are their gene. We have their genes. Avraham Avinu, like we said before, last week, I believe we said this last week, if not I'm saying it now, but Avraham Avinu's main request, his main desire, the main thing he was longing for in life was seed, children. With everything he had everything that a human being could want, wealth, prestige, etc. When Hashem told him, Schorcha harbe ma'oid, which means that he also had Olam Haba, Avraham Avinu responded, Hashem alekim matiten li. What can you possibly give me? I don't have children. What sort of response is that? What Avraham Avinu primarily wanted was that, yes, all the achievements of his lifetime should continue to live on in him. We all are actually a spark of Avraham Avinu. We all carry Avraham Avinu in us. And therefore we have to live up to the opportunity. What he was longing for, children who will continue his career. Are we what he envisioned? Are we what he envisioned? Are we the ones who are living up to everything that he was begging for? These are some of the points we have to consider. I'm going to keep it relatively short tonight, a bit under the weather, so we'll end here.